Welcome to New World Notes. Today, the third and last installment of Robert Kane Pappas's documentary, Orwell Rolls in His Grave. I would have called it Roll Over George Orwell and borrowed the theme song from Chuck Berry, but De Gustibus and all that. The piece is adapted for radio by Lynn Gary and greatly condensed by yours truly. Last week, the series focused on deregulation of the communications industry and the refusal of the commercial media to cover several important stories, including the bad effects of deregulation of the communications industry. This week, we'll look at the so-called free speech rights of broadcasting companies, the political uses of euphemism, and the stolen 2000 election, another story that the media declined to cover. Here and there throughout the piece, connections are made to George Orwell's prophetic book, 1984. Halfway through, we'll take a break and hear a song by David Rovics. Well, we better get this show on the road.
Do you agree with the statement? Whatever is regularly broadcast is the definition of what is news. Or do you have another definition?
That is a good question because, if it happens but you don't hear about it, did it happen?
If the party could thrust its hand into the past and say this or that event never happened, that surely was more terrifying than mere torture or death. George Orwell, 1984.
If the Supreme Court had done for Al Gore what it did for George Bush, I give you a 100% guarantee that I would have written the same identical book, The Betrayal of America.
Vincent Bugliosi, legal scholar.
Five members of the United States Supreme Court committed, in my opinion, and I feel very strongly about this, one of the biggest and most serious crimes in American history when they stopped the recount in Florida, took the election away from the American people, and handed it to George Bush. And in a fair and just world, these five justices belong behind bars as much as any American white-collar criminal who has ever lived. The mainstream media, they don't even want to talk about what the court did anymore. Their position is, and they've made it very, very clear, the election is over with. We've moved on to covering other matters. Now, mind you, and this is not to defend President Clinton, but this is the same group, the mainstream media, who pursued Clinton not just day after day, not just week after week, not just month after month, but year after year. These five justices are ardent federalists, states' rights advocates. And they've said over and over again, we let state courts interpret state law. December the 8th, the Florida Supreme Court ordered a manual recount. The recount started the following morning, a Saturday, December 9th, 8 o'clock. At that point in time, Bush's lead had shrunk over Gore to 154 votes. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Justice Antonin Scalia steps in with an emergency order supported by the four other justices. He said, we got to stop this recount because if it continues, it could, quote, threaten irreparable harm to George Bush, unquote. So even though the election had not yet been decided, the incredible Scalia was presupposing that Bush had won the election, and any recount that showed that Gore had won would threaten irreparable harm to George Bush. Now, if that doesn't show that these justices were trying to steal the election for George Bush, what in the world would?
We're supposed to believe as Americans that all judges have some sort of saint-like qualities, that they're not political in any way, and that we can't even discuss it.
Justice Clarence Thomas's wife works for the Heritage Foundation, a very conservative think tank in Washington, D.C., that assisted Governor Bush in his transition to power.
We don't look at their financial holdings. We don't look at the trips they take to conferences sponsored by ideological groups that want them to rule certain ways.
The night of the election, November 7th, Sandra Day O'Connor's at a cocktail party in Washington, D.C. with her lawyer husband, John. Dan Rather comes on the air at 8 o'clock and announces that it looks like Florida's going for Al Gore. Whereupon O'Connor blurts out, that's just terrible. She was angry. She was upset. The Wall Street Journal found 3 witnesses at the party to confirm that story. Newsweek found 2. Both the Wall Street Journal and Newsweek went to Sandra Day O'Connor for a comment. She declined comment.
Conflict of interest. After the election, George Bush appointed Scalia's son Eugene and Rehnquist's daughter to positions within the administration.
Free speech, when you're talking about the media, it's just a fundamentally disproportionate right. My speech is equal to and as free as the speech of AOL Time Warner when they have this platform of access to the world that, you know, I mean, I'm one person.
Somehow, the freedom to inform the general public has become the exclusive right of media corporations.
Giving them free speech rights was a perverse move. And in fact, it was the kind of thing that conservatives, rock-ribbed conservatives, had ruled out as recently as the 40s.
The Telecommunications Act of 1996.
During the Clinton administration in 1996, behind closed doors, the rules of the airwaves were rewritten. In radio, all regulation was literally thrown out. Small independent stations were bought up. Localism disappeared. Companies like Clear Channel went from owning a few stations to owning over 1,100 and dominating whole markets. But something else happened. Under Reagan, in 1987, the Fairness Doctrine was eliminated. Radio and TV stations were no longer required to air opposing viewpoints. This is partially responsible for the rise of right-wing radio, all the time, from coast to coast. The vice chairman of Clear Channel is Tom Hicks. In 1998, Mr. Hicks purchased the Texas Rangers baseball team in a deal that made President Bush a multimillionaire. Clear Channel banned Dixie Chick songs because the lead singer criticized the president on the run-up to the war.
Tim Robbins, actor and director.
A famous middle-aged rock and roller called me last week to thank me for speaking out against the war, only to go on to tell me that he could not speak himself because he fears repercussions from Clear Channel. They promote our concert appearances, he said. They own most of the stations that play our music. I can't come out against this war.
Why didn't we find out more about that bill before it was passed?
Well, because who's going to report on it, the media?
According to Bill Moyers, during the Senate debate, Senator John McCain said, "You will not see this story on any television or hear it on any radio broadcast." Altogether, the three major network news shows aired a sum total of only 19 minutes of coverage on the Telecommunications Act over the course of 9 months.
Jeff Cohen, founder of FAIR, MSNBC producer.
When a consumer group called the Consumer Federation of America got some money from the long-distance phone companies who were also, for their own different reasons, opposed to the bill, they tried to buy a 30-second spot on CNN saying that this concentration of power in the hands of a few companies would cause cable TV rates to go through the roof and phone rates to go up. And CNN would not even accept their money. They wouldn't even let a consumer group, a dissenting group, buy their way in to the story.
You know, one of the myths of our society, you've probably heard this one, is it's based on competition. Have you heard that? That's the sort of pablum they feed us in the bottom fish. The truth of the matter is at the top of the system, the key to the system, is crushing competition. So what we've seen in media, in all the sectors, you've had fewer and fewer companies. The largest companies buy the small companies. They try to get bigger and bigger and make it harder for new companies to enter. Because once you have just a handful of companies dominate an industry, the ability for someone to enter the industry as a newcomer is almost impossible.
I think there are lots of ways that you make news more profitable, and it doesn't make for better news.
If you ask the reporter, are you interested in truth, of course they'll all say yes. If you go to journalism conferences, which I do quite a bit of, everyone is looking for the truth. The problem is the gatekeepers of truth are not the reporters, they're the owners. And they're the lackey editors who work for the owners. And they'll decide what flies and what works and what pays the freight in terms of the advertising and the numbers. They'll be watching those numbers, and those numbers better be up or they'll get a new anchor.
Joe Kleins, Fox News 10.
The thing that we base our coverage, is it a good day or is it a bad day, is the numbers. I mean, I wish we didn't have to rely on that so much. I wish, there was some way that, you could base, your job or a performance on something other than the numbers. Unfortunately, that's not the climate right now.
That's not news. That's marketing. That's something else. I never heard of doing news based on going for some demographic. You do the news. Call me crazy, but that's what you do. You investigate something because it needs to be investigated, or someone's clearly lying, or there's some issue of the public trust that needs to be looked into. You don't do it because you think some demographic will particularly enjoy the story. I mean, that's nutty.
And it's the underlying theme of all the great laments we see, of all the journalists you talk to now. We're so appalled that the public service they entered has become a purely commercial activity.
A pundit is defined as a learned person. According to James Fallows, in his book Breaking the News, pundits are celebrities, telling us what to think of events. Howard Kurtz, the media reporter for CNN, said, quote, "The culture of news has merged with the relentlessly glitzy world of entertainment, producing one great roaring ooze of headlines and hype." Margaret Carlson of Time magazine said producers want people who can sound learned without confusing the matter with too much knowledge. I'm perfect. Jeff Greenfield of CNN said, "We're booked as entertainers. We know what we're being paid for. We are being paid to fill seats. FaceTime on television translates into big-time lecture fees." According to Brian Lamb of C-SPAN, the message from Washington in the last 20 years is that everyone does everything for money. George Will said, "If you pick your audiences carefully, you can give the same speech every time." McLaughlin said, "It's important to go on the road, where you'll get to hear the whole range of views from the trade association. These speaking engagements are usually given to business and trade associations and paid for by corporations."
children lost their lives, lying broken on the pavement as the ambulance arrives, as the soldiers open fire with their heavy guns. Could you hear the demonstrators hit the ground? See how their red blood runs. What were you doing in those fateful times? Did you raise your voice against these awful crimes? Were you hiding in your bedroom when the situation was so dire? Or did you strike a blow against the empire? Did you strike a blow against the empire? At your door, when the fascist state was here and they brought home the war, when the Gestapo was in the city and they had really taken power, when there was nothing left to do here in the final hour, did you find a place to run to and hope to live a few more years when the slaughter was around you? Did you cover up your ears, or did you set your sights, take your aim and fire? Did you strike a blow against the empire? Did you strike a blow against the empire? Did you strike a blow against the empire?
David Rovics, and Did You Strike a Blow Against the Empire? You're listening to New World Notes. We'll end up with a couple subjects: George Orwell, American media, and the political uses of euphemism, and finally, the big, big, big story of the year 2000, which never got cold.
Euphemism. The substitution of an agreeable expression for one that may suggest something unpleasant.
The whole essence now, almost, of selling some sort of regressive policy, like getting rid of Social Security or environmental regulations, is to dress it up in some name that suggests just the opposite. So if you're going to try to get rid of environmental regulations, you call your group Save the Environment. That's the name of the group that's trying to get rid of the regulations.
When Reagan vetoed the Fairness Doctrine, he said it was inconsistent with the tradition of independent journalism.
It's what Orwell would call the politically euphemistic language that is used by everyone, by politicians, but also by news anchors.
We live in an era now where media has become so used to accepting the spin and accepting the structures that they are given that they don't cover news anymore.
Can lies pose as truth? Winston had a friend at the Ministry of Truth named Syme, who was sure that they could. His job was to eliminate words. The aim was to narrow the range of thought by eliminating words that make real thought possible. There would only be good and evil. Everything that Big Brother represented was good. Everything that opposed Big Brother was evil. As Syme explained to Winston, the whole climate of thought will be different. There will be no thought as we understand it now. Orthodoxy means not thinking. One of these days, thought Winston, Syme will be vaporized. He sees too clearly and speaks too plainly. One day he will disappear. Helen Thomas, Dean of the White House Reporters, was quoted as saying that Bush is the worst president she has covered, the worst president ever. At President Bush's pre-war news conference, for the first time in 40 years, Helen Thomas was not allowed to ask a question. She had disappeared.
A chill wind is blowing in this nation. A message is being sent through the White House and its allies in talk radio and Clear Channel and Cooperstown. If you oppose this administration, there can and will be ramifications.
In the last several years, media corporations and politics have merged in a new way.
Senator Bernie Sanders.
Murdoch is a brilliant man who, what he has done and has had a tremendous influence in the worst possible way on culture and on media in the United States and throughout the world. And what he does it in England and he does it in the United States. His shtick is appealing to working class people and taking them to the right. And he does this through violence. He does this through super patriotism. He does this through sensationalism. So what you have now, and I'll give him credit for this, Fox Television is the first major network that has no pretense. I mean, CBS and NBC, they have a pretense to objectivity.
Rupert Murdoch's Fox News Network is run by Roger Ailes. Ailes was the executive producer of TV for Richard Nixon. He was a consultant to Ronald Reagan and George Bush I. Tony Snow, a host, was a Bush speechwriter. The anchor, Britt Yoon, contributed articles to the ultra-conservative American Spectator. The phrase fair and balanced is repeated incessantly, like a mantra.
Fair, balanced.
Goebbels said, if you repeat a lie often enough, people will believe it.
All of their talk shows are controlled by extreme right-wing Republicans. And it is a front for the right wing of the Republican Party.
John Ellis, the head of Fox's election desk, Jeb and George W. Bush's first cousin. And it's notable that on election night, the first network to declare that George W. Bush had won the presidency of the United States was Fox. And it was John Ellis who made the calculation and the determination that they should make that call.
But it's not only Fox. At GE, the wall between journalism and politics was also broken.
According to the Reuters News Service, former General Electric Chairman Jack Welch came into the NBC studio and insisted that the race be called for fellow Republican George Bush. All the while, an NBC in-house taping system was recording Welch in the studio that night. NBC refused to turn over the tape despite repeated requests from Congressman Henry Waxman. NBC President Andrew Lack claimed turning over the tape would infringe on the editorial process. Waxman replied, Mr. Welch is not a journalist.
And we now know the studies show pretty clearly, they, as they understood, they lost the vote. If there had been a fair vote, they would have been out of power.
Calling the election for George Bush that night set the tone for any recount scenarios.
And the whole tenor of the coverage followed that. If you watch Chris Matthews, O'Reilly, Brian Williams, when is Gore going to finally give up? Another desperation measure by Gore. The assumption being Bush had won. Gore's just scrambling, trying to sneak his way in through some loophole.
And they can rely on Murdoch-owned media assets. Some stories disappear. Others are repeated endlessly. Murdoch, in turn, gets his deregulation. Winston Smith worked at the Ministry of Truth. His job was to alter past news stories so that the version of the truth given by the ruling elite was never contradicted. One of the most troubling things about the media's handling of the 2000 election came a year later. A consortium of major news organizations hired the respected National Opinion Research Council, called NORC, to inspect the 170,000 uncounted votes. NORC was not allowed to characterize its findings. The media companies did that. And the disturbing thing is that they hid the truth by distorting the Florida Supreme Court's actual ruling, which called for the counting of all votes where the intent of the voter was clear. According to the BBC's Greg Palast, who watched the NORC counting operation firsthand, one counter said, quote, it screamed at you. If someone circled Gore, exactly who do you think they wanted as president? The consortium did not comment on the exclusion of tens of thousands of clearly marked ballots, which the NORC data reveals. Instead, the consortium came up with a tortured analysis that showed Bush would have retained a lead under one method of counting, just the undervote. On December 24, 2000, on NBC's Meet the Press, the moderator, Tim Russert, said the following. Florida, Florida, Florida is over. The board is now retired. And that was pretty much the end of the mainstream news media's coverage of the Florida recount and the Supreme Court's decision to stop the counting of votes.
Had Nicaragua had an election like this and the Sandinistas won, the very people that won the Republican election would have insisted that we not only invade Nicaragua, but that all the people who engineered the election be held for war crimes.
But if they would do this, if they would stoop this low to steal our White House, what else would they do? What else are they capable of? What else are they capable of? I want to know.
So what we have here is not the sunlight of democracy, but the dark, ominous shadows of totalitarianism, despotism, fascism.
Orwell Rolls in His Grave was written by Robert Kane Pappas, adapted for radio by Lynn Gary of the Unwelcome Guests Collective, and much condensed and edited by yours truly. New World Notes is produced in the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the presenter, the station management, staff, or the licensee, and their expression is protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. New World Notes can be heard by radio, by digital stream, podcast, or free MP3 download at any time. The easiest way to get a podcast or download would be to go to wwuh.org, find its description of this program, then just click on the convenient link, and you'll be ready to listen, download any show, or subscribe to a podcast. That's wwuh.org. I appreciate your comments and suggestions. Email kdowst, that's kdowst, at hotmail.com. If you'd like to receive weekly email announcements about the next show, drop me a line. Again, that's kdowst at hotmail.com. Until next time, here's wishing you a good week. Remember that war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, illegitimi non carborundum, and keep the faith.